believe it is our fate to be here. It is our destiny. I believe this night holds for each and every one of us the very meaning of our lives.
I know that this is just a filthy figment of my diseased imagination.
Live from New York.
Yeah. I was hoping to interest you in improving your mind.
Science, history, paranormal activity, mysteries of the ages.
A lot of scary things can happen.
Sit back and get ready to be scared.
We're perfectly ordinary Americans.
Good evening, everybody. It is Tuesday, July 28th, 2009, and you're listening to Scared on the Airwaves. With your host, the Scared Crew, part paranormal investigators, part urban explorers, and tonight, supernatural sailors. Hi, my name is Brian J. Cano, and in the crew tonight is my co-host and partner in crime, Chris Mancuso.
Yo!
You've tuned in to hear all things paranormal and all things scared. From Annapolis to Abu Dhabi, from New York to New Zealand, we're live on the Dark Plains Talk Radio Network. So, what's new with the crew?
Well, we had a shoot this weekend, which was very good. Otherwise, it's work, and I'm tired of it, man. There's got to be an easier way to get through the day.
I said, but I'm tired. I've been working all day,
and I'm tired.
I know. It feels like we've been nonstop for weeks. I mean, it's one of those things that I kind of criticize people who are like, oh, we're going on an investigation this weekend, every weekend, and what have we been doing?
We've been going on investigations like every weekend.
Every weekend, and we haven't stopped.
No.
We've got one coming up this weekend.
We do. 2009 has been very, very productive.
I'm a hypocrite.
You are a hypocrite. But it's like, all right, we work all week, then we go on an investigation over the weekend, and then Monday we're back at work, so it feels like there's no like days of rest. Even God gets a day to rest.
Yeah, we don't. Really. There's no weekend, and there's just that Monday where we go, hey, what are we going to talk about on the radio tomorrow?
Yeah, that's around Mondays. Cause, what do we talk about?
Our Mondays consist of panic. Panic and dread.
Bleh.
No, we enjoy doing this, and we love everyone who comes out to support us in a digital fashion.
And thank all you guys for listening. We really do appreciate it because, you know, without our listeners, we'd basically be talking to each other, which, you know, we can do without the benefit of the internet.
Yeah, that's true. We pretty much do that, and when we talk to each other, we don't have to say very much because we've whittled it down. You know, as any you know, pair of friends go, you know, you meet someone, you got a lot to talk about, you have interests, you have common things that you like to speak about and find out about, and as the years go on, it becomes less and less and less, and I think now we just communicate using sounds like,
we grunt, and we know what it is. It's like, I call Brian the phone. We don't say hello anymore. Brian picks up the phone. It's like, ew. And then he goes, bleh.
And that communicates volumes.
Like Neanderthals.
It's a throwback to caveman times, but hey, you know, it worked and it got us here.
That's true.
If there was a www.com, cavemen all over the world would be using it. It would be the newest social networking tool.
Very cool.
What do you know? You know what? Just for the record, I own it.
Brian owns it. And since I was in the room, I own it.
Ugh. Damn loopholes. All right, so then I'm going to have to make my own offshoot. Bleh.com. Different from...
You can't say it while I'm in the room now. I own that one, too.
I just can't get ahead.
I own it. Good stuff.
But, yeah. I mean, actually, well, this weekend, we did integrate something new to our vocabulary of things that we say incessantly and constantly and without pause or respite or even mercy for those around us.
Don't forget your towel. Oh, I'm so high right now. You're the worst character ever, Tally.
I know.
We love Tally. Can't help it.
We definitely do love Tally. We were just, you know, as a character from South Park, and everyone this weekend was going, what are you talking about? What do you mean, don't forget your towel? Who's Towley?
Oh, and to one of our listeners, we got to say, oh, Dan, it's you. Oh, Dan, it's you.
you know, you really shouldn't leave your TV on like that. You know what I did? I climbed out on the ledge to try to pull out the cord, and I couldn't reach. So then you know what I did? I went back to my house and turned on the TV real loud. So the people would just think there was something wrong with our cable.
So that was special for Dana from NEPI.
That's what she gets.
You're welcome.
So yeah, we actually had a very good investigation this weekend. We went down to Baltimore Harbor and checked out the USS Constellation.
Yes, we
with
did.
The crew of Northeastern Paranormal. It's NEPI for short.
That's right.
And that's all I got to say about that. Moving on. No, seriously, we went down to Baltimore. We've worked with these cats before. Always a pleasure, always fun. It's more like hanging out than doing an investigation because we always have such a good time together. And the Constellation was crazy, man. I mean, forget a paranormal investigation for a second. Just to go to this old ship.
Mm.
It was built in 1854, so it's old. It's wooden. It's sails.
It's still floating.
Still floating. I mean, it's been renovated, so. It's not like it's the original, untouched, unrepaired
right.
version of it, but, you know...
There are parts of it that are still original, though.
Someone says to me, the USS Constellation, I thought we were going on to an aircraft carrier. I'm like, yeah!
That's right, I remember that.
We're grabbing ourselves some scare jets. We're going to fly right off the deck, and we'll have our transportation for our next shoot.
But our shoot was actually on Saturday, but we drove down... on Friday night to see Dana and the whole NEPI crew, and we got to hang out with them, you know, the night before, which is always cool, and they're very accommodating and very nice people, and you know, they put us up for the night, which is very much appreciated. And Dana makes bacon in the morning, which I'll drive down there just for bacon. So again, thank you.
Just gotta respond to something really quickly from the chat room. Someone's saying that Don't Forget Your Towel is also a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy
that's
reference,
right.
Which is true, but that's don't go anywhere without your towel. Never leave home without your towel. Not, don't forget your towel. Subtle difference. Learn it, know it, be it. That's all I got to say.
It's good advice either way.
Well, 42 being the answer to everything. Have that embroidered on your towel.
Don't forget your towel. Oh. Okay, we got to stop. I'll do this all night.
I'm so high right now.
You guys want to get high? Maybe I'll just get a little high.
So...
Oh. All right, so anyway, we're talking about the Constellation, and I think we'll also touch upon, you know, some legends about ghosts at sea.
Ghosts at sea.
Ghosts on a boat.
Ghosts. It's like sneaks on a plane. It's ghosts on a boat. Where's Samuel Jackson when you need him?
I'm tired of these mother effing ghosts on his mother effing boat.
Totally. Actually, I think he might have gotten there before we got there, because I was looking.
Well, we keep looking, we keep searching.
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do. Maybe one day that we'll find something. That's my rhetoric from every episode, if you've ever seen it.
if you've never seen the show, what are you doing here? Spock, what are you doing here?
So this Saturday, now there's been a pretty mild summer, almost non-existent summer, but Saturday was hot. Hot, man.
Not only was it hot, it was humid. Mm-hmm. We were bookended by thunder showers. There was, you know, a thunderstorm on Friday. We figured, hey, we might avoid it on Saturday. We get to the boat. And actually, for those of you who've never been to the Constellation, this is a cool thing. It's a museum now. It's a floating museum, and they have this overnight program. Very cool. For $50 a person. I think they have a 20-person minimum.
Mm-hmm.
You can spend overnight on the boat. And the whole purpose of this is to show people how the sailors lived, how they worked, what it was like on a boat. So you eat what they ate, you slept where they sleep. You know, you can check out all the areas of the boat. The time, they go by military time, and the entire time you're there, they're like, all right, it's midnight, it's night watch, we've got this, at, you know, 6 o'clock is Rivoli, it's time to get up, time to have breakfast, this is what you're going to have. Everything was very regimented, and I loved that discipline.
You like that?
I loved it.
I don't like that, man.
I thought it was cool because, I mean, it was a voluntary thing. It wasn't like, you have to do this. It's like, all right, well, we had hours and hours and hours to do what we wanted to do.
But I'm just saying, in general, I don't like to be told what to do, when to do it. You know what I mean? I got a problem with authority.
Yeah, but obviously. We wear uniforms, and I tell you what to do all the time, dude.
I tell you what to do. See, I got a problem with authority, so I don't like military, be it Navy or Army, and I even had a little stint in the Marines, which lasted a whole 5 weeks, because I have a problem with authority.
Well, I think it's a cool thing, because you know you're going to get out at 9 o'clock the next morning, so if you can't handle hanging around on a boat all night, then you're not cut out for even existing, so pretty much, we went to the boat, and we had this great time. When we first get there, one of the first actual official functions was the tour of the boat. You know, they took you from deck to deck. They told you the history of the boat, a brief, you know, kind of checklist of what the boat had done, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But right after that was chow. It was dinner time. And we had, what did we have? We had
beef stew.
Beef stew and this thing called hardtack.
Hardtack.
And hardtack is like, I kid you not, it's like a bathroom tile.
Mm-hmm.
Pry a tile out of your shower, dip it in beef stew, and there's your hardtack.
That was big. I know, especially like during the Civil War, and it's not just the sailors, not just the Navy. It was Army. You know what I mean? And what you have to do with this thing, because all it is they said it's flour and water baked for a long time at a low temperature, and you have to basically soak it in your soup or in your stew to soften it. Otherwise, you like break a tooth on this stuff.
I think unless you dumped it in the ocean and soaked it, it wasn't going to soften up for anything, because I know mine didn't. And I had seconds on the beef stew, so there was nothing.
Beef stew was actually pretty good.
It was.
And I was starving, too.
It filled you up. It kept me satisfied for the entire night. But as we were sitting there eating, the black clouds just rolled in on either side. The entire Baltimore Harbor just got enveloped in this... It's like a blanket of darkness.
It's like I'm surrounded by a black cloud.
It was funny because, you know, we're all sitting there eating, and I look out the window. I'm like, somebody get me the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it got dark and menacing very fast.
It did. And
it's like,
I figured,
I had my back to the window, and I turned around. I'm like, what?
The lightning hit. The thunder came. I'm like, all right, you know what? This is good. It's going to be a hard rain. It's not going to last very long, and it'll probably make things cooler. Good, because, you know, these uniforms get hot in summer.
Yeah, they do.
But what happened? Not what I just said.
Well, it was a hard rain for a while.
It was a hard rain, but it's. I think it made things even worse. The humidity stayed.
Yeah, it definitely did. Definitely did.
And, you know, it was a cool thing, but, you know, we had to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
And in full uniform and find the ghosts.
Now, we're on, like, a sub-deck, like, on that first kind of deck, so there's like a little ceiling above our heads, but you see water coming through it.
We were on the gun deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're on the gun deck, and there was water coming through it.
And one of the things that the team had thought that, hey, this is good. Lightning, this might ionize the air. This mm-hmm. might actually make it easier to find evidence of paranormal activity on the boat. So, you know, that was a good thing. We were able to incorporate that into the conditions of the investigation.
NEPI actually they brought a whole surveillance system, which is good. So we actually didn't have to bring our surveillance system. See, that's why I like working with other groups, because we share.
Because they do all the work.
They do all the work. No, we share stuff. You know what I mean? Like, what's the sense of them having a surveillance system, us having a surveillance system to cover what? The same sections? It doesn't make any sense.
It's me watching you and them watching us and everybody missing the ghosts.
So, I do like that. Like, when we work with other groups, sometimes we'll bring equipment they don't have, and vice versa. You know, and that's always good, because it's more of a team effort than it's not a competition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things that every time we've worked with NEPI, it's like I said, it's fun, and we all get along. It's very seamless, and I think that's a perfect example of how things should go
mm-hmm.
out there. And I know it happens with a lot of groups, you know, it's definitely not a unique thing, but I think it's something that should be a little more widespread than it is.
Yeah, I know.
Officially.
There's a lot of people who are very jealous or possessive of locations that they have investigated.
Don't go to my location. Oh, I was there first. Guess what? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, do you own the location? Do you own the spirits that are supposedly at this location? Like, they're only allowed to talk to you? I don't get it.
I've got exclusive rights to those ghosts. Those ghosts signed the waiver. They were on my camera, and you can't have them.
They're mine for in perpetuity.
In perpetuity, forever.
Forever.
And ever and ever, and on my t-shirts.
Yeah. Trademark. Copyright.
I was going to say something. You totally blew it.
Playing the role of Jay tonight is Brian.
I got sidetracked there.
What? Nothing? Nothing?
We were talking about, actually, earlier. We were talking about how we ate like they ate, the sailors and stuff back in the day. Now, also, they sat on the floor with a little, like, square tarp. They all sat on the square tarp and, like, you know, very, very informal, I guess you would say.
For this time, yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things that, okay, I guess this is probably a good time to actually describe the constellation and go into exactly, you know, how big it was, mm-hmm. how much crew it was. It was constructed in 1854, and it was a sloop of war. And it's the second boat in the United States Navy to carry this name. And according to the U.S. Naval Registry, the original frigate was disassembled down to the keel on June 25th of 1853.
Did you just say frigate? Can you say that on the air?
Frigate, frigue. And it was rebuilt as a faster, heavier ship. It mm-hmm. was originally a bigger boat. It was commissioned on July 28th, 1855, with Captain Charles H. Bell in command. And from the years of 1855 to 1858, the Constellation performed largely diplomatic duties as part of the Mediterranean Squadron. It didn't see much combat during that time because she was the flagship of the U.S. African Squadron. From 1859 to 1861, the Constellation was integral in disrupting slave trade. So, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, triangle trade going on, a lot of ships bringing slaves over from Africa. The Constellation was stopping that. So, I mean, it played a big role.
Now, was that because that's after Lincoln said, basically, okay, you cannot import any more slaves into the U.S.? Like, there could still be slavery, but you just can't import any more slaves.
I think so. I mean, just take a look at the years, 1859 to 1861.
That sounds about right, I think.
Yeah, and they would intercept slave ships. They would release the slaves that were on the ships. To be honest, I don't know.
Would they release them to the water?
Swim, you're free!
You're free! You're free!
I mean, it's not like swimming back to Cuba. I mean, they had a ways to go.
It's like, did they like sell them back to Africa? Or
twice the price? I don't know. This I don't know. And okay. It's funny. It's one of those things that it might be.
I actually want to find that out now.
I don't want to infer that I'm saying anything bad about the Constellation, but it's one of those things that history is written by the victor. History is written by those who write it. So it's one of those things that it's like, we freed slaves. Meanwhile, it's like, yeah, we took them from their boats and we used them on our plantation. You know, who knows? Right. I wasn't there.
Well, they might have just sunk the boat that the slaves were on and go, oh, all right, we freed them.
death is a release.
Death is a sweet release, I guess.
Also, the Constellation spent much of the Civil War, as a deterrent to Confederate cruisers. And it was, you know, because it was the flagship of the Loyalists, of the American Navy, it was a pretty big symbol.
So it just showed up strong, like, yeah, you ain't messing with me.
It was like the Enterprise at the time. It's like, oh my God, Kirk's on that ship.
Right, right.
After the Civil War, the Constellation saw various duties, such as carrying famine relief stores to Ireland, art exhibits to Paris, for instance, the France Exposition Universelle in 1878. And she also spent a number of years as a receiving ship, which pretty much that means it's a floating naval barracks. It was just there for the Navy guys to come and
now, bunk up. It's cool that this ship was, you know, kind of used in wartime, but it was also used, like you said, for famine relief and stuff like that. You know, so that's a good thing, too. It's not just a war machine.
It was also used to train men from the Naval Academy.
It was.
It became a training ship in 1894 for the Naval Training Center in Newport, Rhode Island. And there, she helped train more than 60,000 recruits during World War I. So, I mean, if you just look at the span of the wars, I mean, World War I, Civil War, it spans some time.
What confuses me a little bit, I'm saying, you know, help train sailors for First World War, but by that time there were steamships. Now this is a sailboat. You know what I mean? You know.
Well, the ship was actually decommissioned in 1933. That's when they stopped using it, and it actually spent time in World War II as a relief ship for the Atlantic Fleet. It was a symbol, but it was still in use. You know, they
sometimes
didn't
symbols are powerful things in themselves.
Totally, totally. I mean, the boat itself. Just some statistics: 199 feet long, the waterline at 181 feet. The complement on board would be 20 officers, 220 sailors, and about 45 Marines. So, I mean, think of the boat that we're on. Think of all, you know, just between us and Nepi, you know, 20 people.
That would have been a tight ship, man. That was close quarters, you know what I mean?
20 people? We would be the officers on there. There would be 220 other guys on there, plus 45 Marines, all on that close quarters. I mean, we all spent our time, you know, brief as it was, in the hammocks. Imagine 220 guys with us in those hammocks.
Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
That's life on sea. And, I mean, if we had to go to the bathroom or we wanted to get a snack or something, we just got off the boat and went to the little museum next door.
They had to go
to
the poop deck, I guess you call it.
Well, they had to go to the head.
It was the head of the ship.
Exactly, and that's actually where the name comes from. And I didn't know this until this investigation.
You learned something new.
I learned something.
Look at that.
And I'm disturbed. I'm disturbed. It's nothing paranormal, but it's just spooky.
This is gross.
That's like saying, like, all right, you know, we're going to drive down to Baltimore. I've got to go to the bathroom. Hang on a second. Let me go to the hood of the car. I'll be right back.
I got to go to the hood.
Don't slow down. Just, you know, windshield wipers are probably, you know.
Yeah, like if it's like storming out and stuff like that and there's big waves, like, what if you get washed away?
Well, they counted on the waves to clean it.
I know they counted on the waves to clean it. Like, what if you're in the middle of doing your business?
Then it's like
you get, like, washed overboard.
It's like a reverse bidet. It's like the biggest bidet you've ever been on.
That's messed up. One thing that we learned, that I found this interesting, it's a little, you know, non-paranormal, but I just thought it was cool, a little bit of history, that the captains and the officers weren't fed by the U.S. Navy. They had to buy their own food.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, as we ate, they said, okay, you know, the sailors are promised their three square, and they got it, and here's your tack. But the captain and the officers, they did have to buy their own stores, so.
And I believe the reason was, is the gentlemen on the boat were telling us, they were considered, as officers, gentlemen of the time. So they wouldn't want, you know, as a gentleman, you don't want the government to provide for you, you know,
they also made
like that.
They also made
they made a lot of money.
They made a good amount of money to be officers.
But they actually had to have, you know, buy their own food. And the captain has his own cook. So they have, like, three cooks for the rest of the crew, and the captain gets his own cook. He was a captain, so I guess he got whatever pretty much he wanted. He probably had, like, booty calls on the ship, too, and everything. Whenever it was in dock, you know.
They did say that they kept the animals at the front of the ship, the goats and the sheep. So if that's the kind of booty call you're getting.
That's what the sailors got for sure.
I don't want to know.
They got put in a barrel, like guy Dave was saying.
That too is spooky and
a little disturbing. But that's back in the days when they used to, like, tar and feather you, if you ever heard of that. My grandfather actually was in the Navy, and he told me that.
He got tarred and feathered?
Not him, but other guys, they would actually dump him in tar and throw feathers on him. Why? Maybe the guy, like, screwed up or something like that, but, like, he's like, do you know how hard it is to get tar off you? And plus, it's hot to begin with, so it hurts.
Yeah, it's true. You know what I mean? True. Forget it. I mean, you know, you take a Band-Aid off your finger, and you're scraping that sticky stuff off for the rest of the day.
And plus, it might have just been some, like, rite of passage back then, you know what I mean?
Oh, so the probie's got the tar and feather. Totally. Look out, Brooke. Yeah, we're going to.
Brooke's getting tar and feathered.
We got ideas. So. All right. So
interesting bits of history.
So now that we, you know, told everyone a little bit about the actual history of the Constellation and what life was like on that boat, you know, when you were on it, let's get to the investigation. Let's get to what happened. Let's get to the scared crew and Nepi on board the USS Constellation.
Let's get to it.
All right. Take it away.
All right.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. So we started out, of course, you know, the setup, making sure all the cameras are in place. And I believe it was Dave and Michelle. Hi, Michelle. We're out going around, and Brian was helping too, getting some base readings. We had the power shut down, so this because when the power's on, actually the base readings were pretty high on the EMF detectors.
Yeah.
So once we shut off, you know, you got like a base reading of pretty much zero, you know. Then what else there, Brian?
Well, I mean, when we were first doing our sweeps, we were getting weird valences where, okay, you know, we said, hey, the power's off or the power's on. I was getting readings from a copper pump.
That's right.
And we couldn't figure out exactly why in the middle of this pump I was getting readings. I don't think we actually ever found out why that was happening. It was just a weird thing. And
that's when the power was off?
The power to that section was off, yes.
Okay.
We still had lights, but we couldn't figure out exactly why we were getting those readings from that section. Everything else seemed to be normal. Everything was reading the way it should, the way you would expect it to. And Nepi crew set up their cameras on the hotspots that they figured, okay, would be good locations. The sick bay, mm-hmm. captain's quarters, down the hall. And there was one point down on the berth deck. There's a bridge. Now, on the berth deck, it's all the way at the bottom. It's a very, very raw part of the ship. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, it's no frills. It's all the way at the bottom. And I think, see, I'm not sure if it was because of the renovation of the ship or this is how the ship kind of existed. But, you know, if you look down at the bottom, you're on a gangplank that's kind of above the hull of the ship. And down below there are all these bits, you know, planks of iron. And I was told that during the renovation of it, they decided it was too heavy, this or that. I wasn't exactly clear on why it was, but it was like a mess down there. So that's the berth deck, and there's a long gangplank that goes across it. In the middle of it, a lot of our crew had kind of weird feelings down there. Like, you know, I feel off down there. I feel weird. I feel like something's watching me. I don't feel right.
Mm.
And you know, we went down there with some meters, and we were getting some higher readings from a lit sign that kind of told you, this is the berth deck, and this is what happened down here, yada, yada, yada. But such a sign shouldn't be giving off such big readings to affect people like that.
Right.
I mean, it was just too much. It was too much and too soon.
high EMF exposure, like to actually affect you have to be exposed to it for a long time, I think, right? It's prolonged exposure.
Exactly.
It's not like immediate.
I mean, there are people who are sensitive to all sorts of things if you have heightened senses, like we'll get to in a second. You know, you might see things a little quicker, a little faster, a little more intense, but I mean, just for so many people that were with us that night to say, hey, this is weird. That you know, we did go down there a few times to check it out.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing we got to note about the lowest deck, the berthing deck, is that what's
the berth deck?
The berth deck,
BERTH.
In the front, I think it's the front of the ship. It's like 4 foot high.
It's brook sized.
You know, like even Brooke had, I think, hunch over a little bit. Like, so that's I couldn't imagine being down there for any length of time. I don't know if they stored stuff down there or what.
Yeah, I had a hard time being down there. I had to hunch over. Speaking of hunching over, we're actually hitting the midway mark of the show. So
the hump of the show.
We got to go to break, so I'll stretch my back and take a little walk around, because all this talk about the berth deck is getting me a little cramped here.
Want to massage that for you a little bit there, buddy?
Yeah, all right. Wait till the mic is off.
Don't forget your towel.
Don't forget your towel. And we will be back after this.
Oh, nightmare.
Don't touch that dial, folks. We'll be right back.
Psychic. Medium. Healer. Medical intuitive. Teacher. Author. And speaker. Where can you find all of these traits in one location? Go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com. The official site of Scared's very own Lisa Ann. Celebrating 10 years in business, Lisa Ann will be holding phone reading specials. Once again, go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com.
Have you been wondering what to get that special person in your life?
Visit Mountain View Candleworks, your one-stop shop for candles, fountains, incense, specialty foods, and much, much more. Just visit www.mountainviewcandleworks.com. We make your candles with mountain care.
Are you ready for some rollicking adventure? In Scotty Roberts' book, The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, join Irish Rabbit, Tam O'Hare, and his young squirrel squire, Horatio McNutt, as they journey through Scotland of the mid-1500s seeking a small child who's been stolen by the fairy folk. Crafty raccoon pirates, conniving noble wolves, conflicted royal foxes, and self-serving religious badgers all stand in the way as their quest brings them headlong into high seas action and supernatural intrigue. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare is in bookstores everywhere and at barnesandnoble.com. This hardcover, lushly illustrated chapter book is the first book in the Tam O'Hare series. But hang on to your sabers. Book 2, Tam O'Hare and the Banshee of Ballyglenmorrow, is coming later this year. So swash your buckle and prepare yourself for a historically rollicking, swaggeringly supernatural adventure. Visit tamohair.com to learn more. You'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
Hello, everybody. This is Mr. G from World Paranormal Society and from Haunt the Hunters and DarkPlanesRadio.com. I would like to tell you about a website. It's called treasureforallusa.com, where I got everything from knickknacks to complete DVR systems, a place where you can shop for everything and everything. And if we don't have it, I'll find it for you. That's again, treasureforallusa.com, everything from DVR systems, TV sets, knickknacks, and gifts for loved ones. Come check it out, treasureforallusa.com. You won't be disappointed.
Imagine, if you will, The Office merged with a documentary on the Holocaust. Then throw in some serious real-life paranormal investigation with the CSI-style FX reenactments of historical events. And for good measure, add in a little bit of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert mixed in with the historical research of David McCullough, and you have the ingredients that make up the broth that simmers into refined stew that is Dead Reckoning Radio, hosted by Scott Roberts. Coming soon to the all-new, improved, and the sexy Dark Plains Talk Radio Network. It'll make you hurl with delight.
And welcome back, everybody. Once again, it is Tuesday, July 28th, 2009, and you're listening to Scared on the airwaves. We've just been talking about our investigation this past weekend at the USS Constellation. It was a collaborative effort between the Scared crew and NEPI, the Northeastern Paranormal Investigators. I don't know why I'm talking like this. A little Cliff Clavin in there. From Cheers. Cliff Clavin. Those of you old enough to remember it. Yeah, it's a little known fact that the Constellation was built in 1854. All right, enough of that.
I was just telling you during the break, like on a personal note, I didn't feel anything paranormal. The only thing I felt, I think, was heat exhaustion.
Oh, man, dude. After those first couple of hours, you know, you were pretty much documenting everything that happened with the rest of the crew, and you walked into the conference room. Dude, I thought you were going to collapse.
I thought I was, too.
Oh, my God, you were red, and you're like, I just gotta sit down.
Yeah, but we had the uniform. You know, our uniforms are hot as it is. So then you put 90 degree heat, and then with uniforms, of course, I have an undershirt on under my BDU shirt, and it's just like, wow, sweat galore.
And we still had many, many hours to go.
Mm-hmm. That was in the beginning of the night. I was already dying.
And we didn't get out of there till 9 a.m. And I gotta say, we put the Constellation to the test. Dana had brought the Ovilus at one point. And actually, I've been very curious about the Ovilus since I first saw it at Phenomenology earlier this year.
The paranormal speaking spell.
Pretty much, it's a paranormal speaking spell, and it looks like, I don't know, it looks like a gigantic remote control, and you put it down, and you turn it on, and lights come up, and there's lots of different modes.
Dictionary mode.
I'm just talking about this off the top of my head, so I can't tell you who built it, but it was built by a paranormal investigator, mm-hmm. someone who's into ghost hunting.
Right.
And he built it for the purpose of giving a database of basic words so that a spirit could try to use it to communicate, which...
I don't know.
Conceptually, I have problems with. I think it's too easy. I mean, just because you die doesn't mean you're an expert in electronics.
Yeah, how are you going to know how to use this thing? Like, I'm a ghost. I'm going to go into this machine and start spitting out words.
I mean, if we could take a cell phone, go back in time, and give it to Thomas Jefferson, smart guy, intelligent man, but he'd have no idea what to do with this. Give it to Thomas Edison. He might go, interesting. Circuits, diodes. I'll have to
Even if you give it to Antonio Meucci, he's probably not going to know what the hell's going on.
Exactly. And that's my first problem with the Ovilus. But, you know, we got to keep our minds open, and
yeah,
it's one of those things that, you know, who knows what knowledge is given to those beyond. So
give anything a shot, you know what I mean?
We'll give it a shot. And actually, just honestly, just I still had that bit of kid curiosity in me. I'm like, ooh, this is cool. I want
to
see this work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd love for it to actually work.
And they turned it on, and it, you know, it sounds like, literally, like you said, it's a speaking spell. It comes on, it goes, dictionary mode.
Step, stairs, blah,
it, bleh, kill all eep, humans.
Oop, op, orp,
And I gotta say, I mean, this is the most random machine in the world, and I've seen other people use it, and I love how they jump on every inference of a syllable or a phrase from this machine. But I gotta say, the cats we were with this weekend were not like that. They took everything scientifically and didn't jump to conclusions.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Ovilus did spit out a couple of words, nothing that was put into any intelligible phrases, nothing that was really like, ooh, wow, that's amazing.
Nothing that you can, like, draw anything
yeah.
off of.
I mean, it stayed silent for most of the time that at least I witnessed. And I had asked a question. I said, you know, hey, Dan, is this unusual? Is this an unusual thing for it to be quiet? Or does it just always spit out words and almost kind of like the spirit box or the Radio Shack hack? Does it just, you know, hey, spits out a lot of words, but then every now and then it gives you a good word that you can
mm-hmm.
use? And she said, no, it's quiet, and it usually only responds when there's some kind of stimulus to it.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know.
It's always interesting to see, you know, different methods and things like that, different pieces of equipment that people bring.
I mean, she says, Dana says, you know, hey, it doesn't work for me, it hates me, but I don't know, I hate it back, and I find that that's a good rule of thumb for this equipment. But you got to try everything.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but at least you can say you tried it.
I hope you got it cheap.
Yeah, I mean, that's an expensive piece of equipment for it not to work, unfortunately. I do know, we were talking about earlier the birthing deck. And I remember Chris Miller from NEPI, and I think it was JR, one of the other cats down there, were saying they saw shadows going back and forth down there. Now, there's no portholes or anything at that level. So, I mean, I didn't see any of the shadows myself, but they seemed pretty convinced that they were seeing shadows down there.
Windows on the underbelly of the ship would be a bad thing.
Yeah, totally. I noticed I used portholes.
Porthole, there you go.
I'm getting all nautical.
On us. Ghosts on a boat.
Ghosts on a boat. But I found that interesting, especially because Chris and, you know, Chris Miller and pretty much all of NEPI, very science-based. They don't seem like the type of people to just jump and say, it's a ghost, which so many people are eager to do.
I think that's why we get along so well.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, well, if this guy's saying this, you know, awesome.
Yeah, it definitely lends more credence to the claim of, hey, we saw something, we felt something, we found something.
Found something.
This had better work. There was many times in the night where we kind of did our own thing. We did things together. We had a guest psychic with us this time.
Yes, we did.
And she went through the boat. She got through her impressions
mm-hmm.
of the different rooms. The official report was that she wasn't getting anything too much intelligent, just a lot of residual, a lot of feelings,
right,
a lot
right.
of echoes of what must have been there.
Now, she also said that, you know, I guess as far as her capabilities go, that she has some kind of medium capabilities too, almost like Elisa Ann, where you can talk to spirits. But she said nothing was trying to communicate with her, but she felt like immediately when she got on the boat, like to that first, I think the gun deck, she said she felt pain in her back, like really bad. Now, obviously, life on a ship is hard, But I mean, when she, you know, when we got down to that birthing deck, and I had to bend down, I'm like, oh my God, this is probably what she's feeling, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, wow.
That's crazy because, I mean, like you said, that birth deck, so cramped, so short, and of course it had to be that way to keep the ship afloat. You know, the lower decks had to be shorter in height to account to displace the water, you know, all that scientific stuff.
And actually, too, on that, in the very front, I believe it was, the very front or the very back, I got a little turned around. It's either the fore or the aft of the ship. On that berthing deck,
I think it was the aft.
I think it was the, okay. It was the aft. Could have been. Yeah, maybe.
It was in the aft because it was in the back.
There's all these like little rooms. Like I said, I guess most of them were probably for storage or something like that. But she said she felt somebody in one of those little rooms. Like she felt a presence who, and the closer we got to it, it would keep pushing back into the shadows, not communicating or anything like that. But she said it felt like a very, very afraid. And I'm thinking, well, on this ship, perhaps that was like also used as a brig. You know what I mean? That's where if someone was acting up, they put them down there, or maybe the slaves that they rescued, they put down there, or a prisoner of war, let's say. That's where they kept them.
I mean, whether it be an official function or something that just happened that once for that one personality that was there. I know, in addition to the guest psychic, also Dave felt something very similar, and it was one of the things that they're like, yeah, there's someone over there. He doesn't want to communicate with us. Like, he acknowledges that we're there, but every time we get close, he pulls back. And I think that was the only intelligent, I guess we'll call it a haunting, that the crew found.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, that might have been just that night. Could have been every night. I can't say. We were only there the one night. But that night, that seemed to be the one. Although, Dana from NEPI did find an EVP, and actually they started collecting evidence a different way. I don't want to say a different way or a new way, but it was a way they picked up from, I totally don't remember who she said she picked it up from,
okay.
But when this feed catches up to the chat room, she'll be able to tell everybody who she got it from. But she said that instead of recording hours and hours and hours of audio and then waiting till she got home to review it, they now practice doing this in 5-minute segments.
Right.
Record 5 minutes and then listen to it right away so that, hey, we're here right now. If something communicated, like, hey, help me, or open that door, or there's something here, they can respond to it instead of going, oh, wow, there's something there, and now we got to wait months to go back.
I've actually seen other people and other groups do that as well.
And we're actually going to play a clip for you in a few moments. This is a piece of evidence submitted by Dana from NEPI.
Oh, Dana, it's you.
Oh, Dana, it's your EVP. And the clip you're about to hear was taken down, I think, on the gun deck. Or actually, it might have even been the berth deck. Like I said, when this catches up to you guys, she'll correct me in the chat room. The clip you're about to hear, there's a question cut off of it. She originally asks, what was your purpose on this ship, or what did you do on this ship? And the clip is about 18 seconds long, so just wait for it. Just give it a listen. We'll come back, we'll talk about it, and we'll play it again.
How long have you been on the ship?
Okay, that was the first playing of Dana's EVP. We're going to play it once more. We don't know if you heard it, but just maybe crank up your volume. She's going to ask a question. There's going to be some just room tone and then a communication. Here it is one more time.
How long have you been on the ship?
Now there it is again. We've actually heard several different things There have been actually a couple different opinions, and I've heard this EVP at least 10 times, and I've heard two separate things. Knowing that the question that preceded that recording was, what was your function here on the ship? What did you do on this ship? Some of us at first thought that the response was doctor. Hearing it again, and actually hearing it just now, it sounds like don't. You know, whether it's doctor or don't or some third option, it definitely was not any of the people who were present. So it's that's a compelling thing.
Yeah, to me it sounded like almost like a female voice that says don't. I don't know what relevance that would have on a ship.
What would a woman be doing on a boat?
Well,
I mean, she's saying don't, you know, that brings to mind a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, life back then, you know, who knows?
And, I mean, originally it seemed to make sense because of the question of what do you do here. When I heard it on the boat, when actually Dana played it for me on the deck, I heard doctor. Loud and clear, I'm like, oh, it's two syllables, doctor. He's answering the question. And the theory was, hey, you know, it took 18 seconds for it to answer the question. Maybe there's that delay, almost like a simulcast when someone's out on the West Coast and they're transmitting to the East Coast and they say something and it takes a couple of seconds for the question to catch up and be answered. You know, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I mean, I'm not hearing doctor tonight. I'm hearing don't. So it doesn't seem to be a direct answer to either of those questions unless it's just saying, like don't ask or leave me alone or whatever. I don't know.
Or like it could have been, you know... Like people say, it's traumatic events that leave residuals, that leave, you know, impressions. And, you know, maybe some female was on the ship and got raped. I mean, why saying don't? To me, it doesn't make any sense, especially a female voice.
That's another thing, too, okay? This ship is docked in Boston Harbor, so, of course, you know, it's... We're assuming that whatever we catch on the boat either is on the boat, belongs on the boat, has always been on the boat. I mean, this could just be, I don't know, just a transient thing. I mean, what was in this location before the boat got there? You know, has any materials or something from somewhere else been used to renovate the boat?
Now, actually, I want to ask you a question. I want your opinion on this. Because as you know, and I know, and most people probably know, water... is a conductor. And would that have any effect, especially with the iron on the ship? I know most of the ship is made of wood, but you think that the fact that it's on water, would it enhance any kind of energy like that, being a conductor and all?
See, I don't know. I mean, the water obviously not being on the ship, but being around and under the ship, it's possible. I mean, something doesn't have to be in direct contact for it to enhance it. Just like, you know, we had the thunder shower right before the investigation. The air was ionized by the lightning. And that connects everything. That's pretty much just I'm not even sure how to connect the two, but I don't see why not. I don't know how it lends to this particular example.
Well, maybe not to... Not per se to this particular example, but just in general, like if water does enhance the kind of energy, like if you took that boat out of the water and just had a dry dock somewhere, are you going to get the same, you know, readings? Are the psychics going to get the same feelings?
I mean, certain materials can hold EMF in it, so I mean, it's one of those things that if the spirit is energy and it's being held somewhere, it could either be held in an object that can conduct it. I don't know if the water is doing anything to it, but I mean, we kind of got stuck on the Constellation on this episode. I wanted to talk more about more nautical hauntings and other ghost stories of ships and ghost ships and ghosts on ships. I mean,
ghosts on boats.
And the Navy has a tradition. All navies historically have traditions of, you know, spirit sightings, ships that have sunk that they see on the horizon that couldn't have been there because right. They witnessed it sink in a battle. You get your whole Bermuda Triangle phenomenon.
Totally.
There's so much going on with water, and I mean, that is right now our undiscovered country, the depths of the ocean, the
Yeah, we don't know a lot about, you know, what's under the, you know, ocean there.
We live on a planet that is primarily covered with water.
70%, I think it is.
We are so lacking in our knowledge of it and what its, I guess, grand effect on everything is. H2O, it's a simple formula, you know, and in the ocean, add a little salt to that. And, I mean, we've got something that's right now, at least for this example, is an X factor. And because it's docked in a harbor, I mean, I would love to take the Constellation out to sea and see what happens.
Right. Also, another thing, just about it being a woman and stuff like that, our guest psychic has said that, I think it was right in the captain's quarters too, she felt the presence of a woman. And I actually, now me being a skeptic, I kind of turned to her and I'm like, well, you do know that, you know, especially back then, like, women on ships were basically considered taboo. You know what I mean? So I was like, what would a woman be doing on this ship? I said, unless, you know, the boat docked and a captain had a booty call or something like that, there would be no reason for a woman to be on the ship. Like sailors were very superstitious about that.
I think, yes, that is definitely true. As far as the rest of the crew and everything, they would, you know, they weren't allowed to bring women on board. They weren't, you know, if there was a family or any kind of female visitation, whether it be prostitutes or otherwise, that was supposed to be handled off ship. But, you know, honestly, it's easy for us to say, you know, as armchair historians, for not being there. I guarantee that somewhere along the line, there was at least a woman, if not many women, on a boat, on every boat that has, you know, sailed from any harbor at any time in history. And it's necessarily unusual that you heard one on the boat.
It's possible.
And again, like I said, it's one of those things that's like, all right, it doesn't necessarily need to be tied to that boat.
Right.
I mean, look at the population of Baltimore itself. It could just be one of those wandering things that's just like, hey, it might be tied to the dock. It might be tied to the building that's next door.
Or it could have been tied to, if she's feeling a woman, it could have been tied to one of the people on the restoration crew, who's to say that was all guys either.
Could be.
I mean, I'm not psychically inclined, so I don't, you know, I can't really speak for the psychic as to what she felt other than a female presence.
And all in all, I mean, this is something that we learned from our Garibaldi Amici Museum excursion, that when we encountered the spirit of Mr. Meucci, it's one of those things that I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is his house, this is his museum, of course he's going to come here. But Lisa Ann said, oh, this is just one of the many places he goes to. He's got, you know, essentially he's got business. It's like he's got chores. He goes to the museum for a little bit, he goes to wherever he goes, and he's not tied to that location.
Right, right.
I mean, a lot of times you know, we talk about focused spirits that are tied to an object or a location or even a person. This could just be one of those things that's not really, really tied to it. And it's kind of ridiculous to say. I mean, someone in the chat room said that, oh, I've never heard of anyone report a woman's spirit on the Constellation. It's like, all right, well, that's fine. Maybe this is the first. Who's to say that everything that's been reported is all that can be?
And you know what? The Constellation today is a museum, so maybe one of these ghosts want to go sightseeing.
All right, Jay.
I'm sorry. I'm almost serious.
I mean, but seriously, it's like one of those things that if we're gonna search, we're searching to find something, you know, hopefully new, hopefully that clarifies our understanding of things, but it's one of those things that if we stay a narrow vision of like, okay, there must be the ghost of the captain on here, there must be ghost of sailors, it's like, all right, again, like we always say, you're going to find what you look for.
Right.
We weren't looking for this. We found it. And it's like, I think that's great.
Yeah, I have no, I'm just curious as to why, almost, you know what I mean?
Why?
Like you wouldn't expect that. So we got something that was, we got that, like you said, that X factor. It's unexpected. So.
Yeah, I mean, I dig that. It wasn't expected, so I'm not going to automatically say, oh, hey, there's no women on boats. That's wrong. That can't be anything. You're wrong. I'm unimpressed with that. But
I'm unimpressed.
No, I'm unimpressed. Just me. No, seriously, I think it's a good thing that it was caught, and obviously we gotta look into every piece of evidence, every piece of audio, every piece of video, everything that we capture, pretty much as if it's the very first thing that was caught there. I mean, I don't care how many groups have been there before. This is the first time we've been there, and we have to take it as such.
Right.
We can't afford to be colored or jaded or even biased by prior reports. As scientists, we do have to take that into consideration, but we're also looking to build upon what has come before. And I think it would take us many more trips back to the constellation to adequately give a report to say yay or nay.
As with any location, yes, I agree. I do also want to add real quick that I did collapse, I think, about 3:30 in the morning from, like, heat exhaustion. I slept on one of those hammocks for, like, 3 hours, and I was out cold. Didn't even know. I woke up, like, I think Michelle woke me up at, like, 7-something in the morning, and it's like, the deck is empty. I'm like, what? There was, like, surveillance equipment right now. Everybody's packed up. I'm like, what happened?
Well, I was wondering where you went, and I eventually did find you down on the where the hammocks were. And it's funny because a lot of the crew at various times of the night did go to catch a couple Z's in the hammocks, and I think I got maybe half an hour of sleep. I had decided to film the sun coming up, and after I got that, I said, all right, you know what? Breakfast is in half an hour. Let me try to get a couple Z's. So I found where you were. I got to the hammock nearby.
Oh, you laid next to me.
Aww.
Yeah, I got my towel.
When that's the thing. When I got up, I'm like, I'm awake. Where is everybody? Oh, my God! And I looked, and you were there, and the lights were on, and you were the only person there. I'm like all right, I'm going to go.
I'm going to leave him on the boat.
I'm going to leave you on the boat. I'll get home, and I'll call you and wake you up.
But my intention, just for the record, my intention was to rest my eyes for about 10 minutes. So I put the camera was on the floor next to me. So I'm laying there, like, all right, I just rest my eyes for 10 minutes. Next thing I know, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my God.
It was a possession, a routine possession.
Heat exhaustion.
But, yeah, again, just to wrap up, I mean, we're always running out of time on this show because we get to talking and it goes.
Dude, we didn't even get to revert to our, like, notes here.
Didn't get to talk about everything we wanted to talk about because it was a good night.
And that's a whole nother episode.
Thumbs up to Dana, Chris, and the entire Nepi crew. You guys are awesome. We're looking forward to the next excursion.
Word.
Just for us, we're the Scared Crew. Check out www.scaredonline.com. Check out our episodes. Get some DVDs. Our Phoenixville Library DVD, which just came out last week, is selling very well. Get yours before it's gone. Be sure to check out the other fine shows on Dark Plains Radio. And don't forget to come visit us in Arizona at HauntedCon in September.
September 24th through 26th.
And that's us. That's the show. I'm Chris.
I'm Chris. You're Brian.
I was trying to possess you, dude, because, you know, when you're asleep, I go run around and I say word and I act like you.
I'm Chris.
And you're Brian. And this has been another episode of Scared on the Airwaves. See you next Tuesday.
We hang out way too much.
Holy nightmare. Scared on the air.
Listening to the best in talk radio on Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds, including paranormal, politics, sports, or anything of interest around the world. Listen into Between Two Worlds Radio with Derek White Sky Cloud, a talk show interviewing a variety of paranormal friends and strange events. Psychic medium and paranormal investigator Derek White Sky Cloud will be doing his mediumship messages on darkplainsradio.com. Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. It's a howling great time. That's Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds in talk radio.